talk to me. What's going on here?
Ask the FBI. They got the universal terrorist playbook, and they're running it step by step.
It's gonna go. It's gonna go!
Pissing in the pants right now.
Bears gonna have my ass.
Well, in honor of Beethoven, that going to be on our show today, not actually Beethoven, but Lyle, that's pretty close. Did you recognize that theme there from Die Hard?
Oh, I didn't recognize the movie. I recognize, of course, the music. But
yes, one of the many films that Beethoven has been in. He was in Saturday Night Fever, did you know that?
No.
Yeah. When what's his name, Mr. Fever Boy, makes his first entrance as his new thing, you know, he walks, you know, Travolta walks into the club, he walks in and they play something, Heroica or something.
Oh, the Fifth of Beethoven, was that one that was popular?
Yeah. Then there was that dog movie called Beethoven.
Oh excuse me a moment.
Yeah. Ooh, where is he going? Can we follow him?
His doorbell rang.
This is more interesting than anything I've been doing recently. I took my sleeping pill too late. You know, if you want to wake up at 7, don't take your sleeping pill at 6. So I actually won't be up until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So this is just my subconscious. Yes. Any luck?
Yeah, it was the mailman.
Yeah, did he have some?
He just rings once.
He rings a doorbell when he's got mail for you?
When there's an extra big package or something.
Oh, what'd you get?
Well, as a volume of Marcel Dupre's edition of Bach, volume 5.
Oh, you've been waiting for that.
I was waiting for it, yes. I'm very excited to get it.
Is it the music itself?
Music, yes, it's music.
I know that it's music. I mean, but it's a thing you can play. You can play that now?
Yes, it's a music.
Bach. Bach.
Not Beethoven, yes.
Bach. Well, we should have done a show. You want to stop for a minute here and get your edition, and we'll talk Bach.
No, I know what it looks like.
Yeah.
Because I ordered it.
Can you do this? Can you do Bach on the carillon?
Yes, I do all the time.
All the time.
But not
what's
Beethoven.
What's Bach's biggest carillon hit, would you say, in your thinking?
A lot of his music, like the cello music or the...
Cello works good for carillon?
Yeah, cello, violin.
Who would have thought that, you know, you write something for cello and what?
Music. What? Not his keyboard music. The organ music, the harpsichord music, not so good.
Because harpsichord is a different beast.
Yes, it's too... The texture isn't right.
Totally wrong.
Well, anyway.
It's nice for what it is.
But send it Bach.
Yeah. Can we see it? Can you? It's kind of a moment.
Oh.
I don't know. You know, I really didn't have anything much planned since I'm not up yet. Right now I'd be getting up to pee for about the third time. And a circle of cycles.
Doesn't seem like it's the right thing.
There it is. Well, let's open. This is so exciting. I know, because this is when a musician gets Bach in the mail, it's not to be sneezed at.
This just doesn't seem like the right size, but maybe it is.
That's what she said.
Oh, but that's what she said jokes.
Yeah, I got to. Once they're in your brain, you can't lose them. even though that paper company is long gone. Maybe they made that packaging. It's exciting, isn't it? I'm happy for you.
People for Bach.
Bach is lucky to have you, Lyle. I mean it.
Well, it looks like it.
Looks like what?
What I thought it was.
Yeah, you have a problem with it? Is it heavy?
Comes in hermetically sealed packaging.
We don't care about that so much.
No.
Let's see the Bach. Let's see what comes with this Bach. I can't do that.
Well, this is what it looks like.
J.S. Bach, Marcel Dupré.
Yes.
Yes. What does he say? What's the listing there in the cover?
It's Annoté et Doigté.
Huh?
It's Annoté et Doigté par Marcel Dupré.
I didn't see any of that there. What's that on the bottom there? Right. What's that? The Huit Petites Prejudices and Fugues.
Yeah, Huit Petites Préludes et Fugues. Trois préludes, neuf fugues, cinq fantaisies, volume cinq.
Good thing you speak French, because I wouldn't know what I got there, and I'd want to send it back.
Yes. And it's in good condition, too.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Where'd you get it from?
Amazon.
Oh, that's the only disappointing thing there. That money goes back to the trillionaire.
The edges are rubbed, light soiling, binding tight.
Biden tight? Biden, got a new Biden phrase? Tight.
But the text and scores are clean but aged tanned.
All right, I think it's enough of that. Anyway, we lost the momentum from the Die Hard Beethoven opening, but that's okay.
And this originally was only $5.50.
Yeah, when? In 1940? In today's money, that would be $150,000.
Exactly.
I worked it out. Don't ask me how.
No.
Well, all right. Fine. Let's go right to the news then, because this is not going anywhere. Not that it would ordinarily, and I'm not blaming you. I thought that was very interesting. And of those fugues and stuff.
Fascinating.
Of those fugues and stuff, though, Lyle, which one are you most looking forward to?
His one of the fantasies.
Well, okay, I get that, but I mean, what are you looking forward to?
Because he recorded one of them. Marcel Dupré did.
Oh, that's Marcel Dupré recorded Bach.
Yes, he played all of them from everything that Bach wrote from memory in 1932.
Bach wrote them from memory, or he played them from memory.
Or so.
Yeah. What? Okay. All right, a little more than we need to know. Interesting, yeah. Though. Very interesting.
All right,
from beneath the planet of all the news that isn't, I have to say that vaccine hesitancy is not among my hesitancies. I'm hesitant to discuss the other ones. Frankly, a lot of them are no fucking ways, not really hesitant. Monkeys with Elon Musk brain implants become total assholes who are pretty damn smart. In a snit over Ingenuity, the little copter getting all the attention on Mars, InSight, the Mars lander, goes into HAL 9000 mode, sings Daisy, Daisy, and won't let the little guy in.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Ingenuity. Biden Republicans. I mean, if there are Biden Republicans, wouldn't we have heard from them by now?
I would
think. A sighting, at least. When I see the first Biden Republican bumper sticker, I'll believe it. They say Biden wants to be the new FDR, and if he keeps falling down, he will be. Page 2. Democrats introduce a bill to stuff that is to expand the Supreme Court from 9 to 13 or 14, maybe 15.
17.
Just a question of how big a bench they can get in there. The Supreme Court plan also features a designated justice who can come in off the bench, onto the bench, as needed. Now, how about a post office with 13 postmaster generals? Stuff the mailbox. The Milwaukee Zoo's newest baby is a 94-pound camel. Well, what were they expecting from a camel couple? That's what they're going to have. I suppose they could have adopted. Kind of like the discovery of the monkey dactyl, a Jurassic flying dinosaur with opposable thumbs. But come on, what's a monkey dactyl going to have? Dactyl. Opposable thumbs. Stay out of this, Lyle. None your business.
Dactyl.
Stick to Bach. Nice try, but no cigar for asteroid 2021 GW4, which misses striking Earth by a good 12,000 miles. Whoa, that's only L.A. to Pango Pango. Well, even with a bullseye, how much damage could a rock the size of an SUV traveling at 18,700 miles per hour do? What?
A lot.
Oh, well, maybe next time it'll hit Mar-a-Lago. And today's the big day for Prince Philip. But with all the pomp and circumstance, the closest he'll ever get to a coronation. I think uneasy Philip's head should have lied, had it worn the crown. You know, on his part, he would have stayed kissing cousins with Elizabeth, but she insisted, you know. Doesn't, you know, that was the one condition, you know. No king. No king deal for you, Phil. Because, you know, king and queen cousins, it's a little, even for royal families. Don't you think? Philip was not buried in his Range Rover, as expected, in the hole that he left from his last motor car collision, but he did ride there to it, to his resting place. William and Harry were both at their grandfather's funeral, but the Queen has decreed no military uniforms for it. She had to do that because Harry gave up his commission. She made Harry give up his commission to Princess Anne. So she's now got his uniforms and everything, and she thought that would look bad. Even though Anne had it taken in, moved some of the medals around so they wouldn't, you know, stick out. And they say she looks damn fetching with a broadsword at her side. Meghan did not go to the services for the man who said of her baby, "What color would it be then?" Yeah, I don't know, maybe she should have sucked it in and gone. No, I don't mean the baby. Gats tuckered out. You know, Trump threw Gats under the bus strictly for hair resentment. That's what it was all about.
Okay.
Everything else about the kid was perfect. But the hair, staring at head hair, staring him in the face all the time. And this from Common Misconceptions. A common misconception is that you have to smoke medical marijuana with your doctor. And that's all the news from beneath the planet of the news that all is that there is. So we've been speaking so much of music. Let's continue that. Did you know that there is music in a spider's web?
No.
Lyle Anderson?
No, I did not know that.
Do you find yourself saying, how can that be?
How can that be?
You find yourself saying, no.
More no, yeah.
More no, yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. It's very interesting, and I'll tell you why, because it says right here, Marcus Bueller, engineering professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, excuse me, who has been using artificial intelligence to study spiders and their songs. With me so far?
Okay.
Spiders utilize vibrations as a way to communicate with the environment, with other spiders. We have recorded these vibrations from spiders and used artificial intelligence to learn these vibrational patterns and associate them with certain actions. So now this all makes sense.
It's like another world.
It's very much like what we do. We could make music out of what you do in your daily routine.
Wood sticks, yes.
Basically learning the spider's language. Bueller and his team of researchers created 3D models of spider webs when the arachnids were doing different things. Going to the bathroom and mating and construction, repair, hunting, and feeding. Then they listened for patterns in the spider signals and recreated the sounds using computers and mathematical algorithms, as the spiders would have. They had the equipment to do it.
They had the, yeah.
Yes, equipment. A spider DJ would be pretty cool. This will be next. God, I wish I'd get... I'm sorry I said it out loud. Get in the spider DJ. on the ground floor. Spiders are a whole different animal, said Bueller.
Well,
I wish he hadn't said that. That kind of minimizes the...
Truer words were never said.
Yeah. What they see or sense isn't actually audible or visible to the human eye or the human ear. And so by transposing it, and you do a lot of transposing, right?
No.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's very difficult to do.
Especially if you're a spider trying to do Bach, do a Bach fugue.
So you've got this thing in C and you want it to go to A flat.
Yeah, is that really hard to do?
Yes, for me.
It's just rewriting the music, though, isn't it? That different?
I bet for a spider it's a piece of cake.
What does it sound like? Well, you're in luck. Sounds like Santa and gimbals to me so far. What's he doing now? I think he's looking for...
Here, the frequency spectrum, the chords, if you wish, or melodies, are really the kind of relationships that the spider would also experience. And so we can begin to feel a little bit like a spider in that way.
Yes, we sure. What do you want? I'll have whatever he's having. Look, he's got an iPhone. Spider has an iPhone. Very musical.
Spider didn't think
that. Nice, huh? Very talented spider. I'm sorry?
These kids at MIT. They got a sense of humor. I got to give them that.
Well, let's hear it for artificial intelligence. More entertaining than ours.
More artificial.
And other miscellaneous news we can get to. Mystery tree. Okay. When animal welfare officers received a report of an unusual animal lurking in a tree in the Polish city of Krakow, they were not sure what to expect. People aren't opening their windows because they're afraid it will go into their house, a woman reportedly said in Polish. But a visit to the area showed the creature in question was not a bird or even a reptile, but a croissant.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, anyhow, and that shut down the city there for a while. The woman reported that it looked more like a lagoon, Polish for lagoon, before remembering the correct leguan or iguana was the word she's searching for. So even though they're correcting her, Polish. I mean, she's Polish. She thought it could be a bird of prey. It could be a croissant of prey. All the inspectors knew that it was unlikely that a reptile would survive the cool spring temperatures in southern Poland. They wondered if the animal could have been an unwanted pet abandoned by its owners. Someone abandoned that croissant, do you think?
A baker.
Damn! He threw it out the window, lodged in a tree outside this woman's apartment, and the rest is Polish history. Arriving on the scene, however, the inspectors found the headless and limbless object in the lilac tree.
Lilac tree?
Pastry, probably thrown out of a window to feed birds. The organization remained lighthearted about the encounter and said the public should continue to err on the side of caution and report any croissants to animal welfare.
Oh, my.
Well, I mean, we want to get the Beethoven here, but I would be remiss if I didn't go on, and that sort of brings to mind something that's very important to me. The ass fruit.
The what?
The ass fruit. The famous English ass fruit.
Never heard of it.
I sent you the story. I'm sorry, and you don't remember it?
No.
You're a young, it goes back to medieval times, the ass fruit.
Really?
Here are young... ladies and but mostly gentlemen. Mostly they're gentlemen. Sometimes they're not. And they're around the ass fruit bush. They are frolicking around the ass fruit bush.
It's more like a fountain to me, but...
Wow. The fountains, the ass fruit grows around a fountain.
Generally speaking. I see.
It likes the water.
Okay.
The ass fruit does. Ass fruit, it's a forgotten medieval fruit with a vulgar name, according to the BBC. I don't see what's vulgar about ass fruit. The team were excavating the ancient village of Tuscitium, now Eschentz, Switzerland, ruled by a Celtic king who was personally given the land by Julius Caesar. Boy, quite a history for this ass fruit. It was built on the banks of the River Rhine along what was then an important trade route. And as a result, its remains have been steeped in water ever since. What should have rotted away centuries ago was uncovered in a remarkable state of preservation, protected by the lack of oxygen in the boggy conditions. It was here that... What? Got somewhere to be?
No, I said, well...
It was here that nestled among the remains of familiar foods such as plums, damsons, cherries, peaches, and walnuts in an ancient cesspit. The archaeologists found 19 curiously large seeds. Though they were, let's say, deposited there nearly 2,000 years ago. You know what that means, what they came out of.
2,000 years?
Yes, 2,000 years ago. You know what they mean by deposited?
You know what they mean by medieval? No, I don't.
Oh, okay, good point. They almost look fresh, enough to have been found yesterday. Except that the fruit that they belong to is now so obscure, it can baffle even professional botanists.
That's hard to do.
Hard to be a professional botanist, I would think, these days.
They're not easily baffled.
No. The polite, socially acceptable name by which it's currently known is Medlar. The Medlar. But for the best of 900 years, the fruit was called the ass fruit or open arse. Thought to be a reference to the appearance of its own large calyx or bottom. The Medlar's aliases abroad were hardly more flattering. France was rarely known as La Partie Pasturiere des Quadrupèdes.
Well, posterior part of a quadruped.
Yeah, the posterior part of a quadruped. Yes, very good, thank you.
Like a dog
also, a monkey's bottom. I'll give it just give the translation. Monkey's bottom or donkey's bottom.
Oh,
dog's bottom or that guy over there is bottom. You get the idea. H2.
That's fruit. System. Yes.
The first record of the medlar's existence is a fragment of Greek poetry from the 7th century BC. Eventually, the fruit is thought to have fallen into the hands of the Romans, as all things did, who brought it to southern France and Britain. In 800 AD, Charlemagne included it on a list of plants that were mandatory in the king's many gardens. So Charlemagne, Mon, whatever you want to say, demanded it, ass fruit in his gardens. He said, listen, this is our garden. I want you to put most of it in ass fruit. And he put some lilacs in there if you want.
Lilac trees in Poland.
Lilac trees. Mandatory. And nearly 200 years later, the English abbot and writer Alfric of Ensheim first committed its rather rude sobriquet, ket, to the public record. Why don't they, this is the BBC, why don't they use English?
The BBC.
From there, the fruit's popularity steadily increased. It became a staple of medieval monasteries and royal courtyards, as well as public spaces such as village greens. It's featured in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, and the two-time queen consort of Anne of Brittany's Book of Hours, a kind of illustrated religious manuscript popular in the Middle Ages. Henry VIII had a medlar planted at Hampton Court and gifted his French counterpart with large quantities of ass fruit.
I'll bet he did.
A mixed message, I would think, wouldn't you? Somewhat. Don't forget to take your ass fruit.
That Henry.
Yeah. The fruit reached its peak in the 1600s when it was widely grown across England as ordinary as apples, pears, mulberries, and quince.
Well.
From this lofty pinnacle, it went a steady decline. Oh. It was still widely known until the early 20th century, though less celebrated. Then in the 50s, it abruptly vanished from public consciousness altogether.
Whoa.
Yeah. Medlar and open arse can be used to both... referred to the fruit in this shrub-like tree on which it's grown, Mespilius germanica. Oh, a German ass.
Well, they get in there somehow, you know.
Yeah, close relative of roses, crab apples, and quince. It can only be eaten when it's rotten. Yeah, because when they're first picked, medlars are greenish-brown and resemble oddly shaped onions. If they're eaten straight away, they can make you violently ill or even kill you.
Well, great.
And certainly cause diarrhea before they do. But if you're put, you put yourself in a crate of, you put them in a crate of sawdust or straw and leave them go for several weeks, they darken, rot, and the astringent flesh softens to the consistency of a baked apple. Okay, I find this fascinating, but I'm not sure everyone does.
But not very tasty.
All right. So someone wrote in recently and said, Lyle is so good talking about music, but he's omitted the great Ludwig von Beethoven. And I said, well, we'll remedy that, because I know, I mean, Bach is his personal favorite. I think we've established that. But Beethoven, and he wrote a lot of stuff that can be played on bells, can he? Ooh. I would think so.
Beethoven?
Beethoven.
No.
No?
No. In a word, no.
Nothing? Sonatas?
Well, people have tried, but it's his stuff doesn't really fit.
Not even the heroic stuff, and the Napoleon stuff?
It's not for lack of trying, but it's...
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. But let's find out. And that same listener said to you, ask Lyle.
Said or wrote?
No, he said, what?
You said wrote.
Said in writing.
Oh, said in writing. Oh, wow, that's different.
With Beethoven, every little movement has a meaning all its own. Agree or disagree?
Every little movement is like every little thing you said.
So you disagree? They'll be hurt.
Every little thing means something with Beethoven. That's true.
So without further ado,
Ludwig. On the seventh day, while God rested, Beethoven made music. Considering the general state of the planet, one might argue Beethoven's creation has held up better. Unfortunately for Ludwig van Beethoven, his seemingly supernatural creative powers were housed in a body of an immortal, and not the best example of one at that, infested as it was with a host of nagging medical, spiritual, and social complaints. Beethoven observed few of the niceties endemic to Viennese social standing, nor was he high-born, although he did little to discourage the van in his name being widely misinterpreted as a sign of breeding. Mm-hmm. But the closest he ever got to blue blood was the rumor he may have circulated that he was the illegitimate son of King Friedrich Wilhelm II. From the onset, Beethoven was protected and financed by his friends amongst the nobility, who gave wide berth to his eccentricities of habit and his more than passing interest in their wives. Beethoven did not sit below the salt. He was what he liked to refer to as a tone poet, an artist of the highest order. And while the title was self-bestowed, it was soon recognized and accorded its due in the aristocratic circle he was adopted into. Christian Gottlieb Neffe, the court organist, was his first teacher. And at age 6, Ludwig made his debut at the Musical Academy in Cologne with various piano concerti and trios. When he was 11, the Magazin de Musique wrote, "He will undoubtedly become a second Mozart if he progresses as well as he has begun." Mm. The Holy Child's first published works were a set of variations in 1783. Three piano sonatas followed shortly thereafter. And here's Beethoven at about age 14.
Oh, he's smiling. That's probably the last time he smiled.
Well, he's attempting to smile, yes.
Yeah, close.
A few years later, Mozart himself, after hearing young Beethoven improvise at the piano, said to his cronies in the adjacent room, "Watch out for him. He will have something to tell you." Maybe it loses something in the translation.
The delivery, maybe.
Well, you know Mozart.
Yeah, did he, by the way? Tom Hulce was the most annoying actor to play that part. Yeah, unbelievable.
Who knows?
Lost all respect for Mozart and Hulce.
Beethoven moved to Vienna in order to study with Haydn. And here, Papa Haydn.
Is that
Papa
14?
Joe Haydn, predecessor of Papa Joe Biden.
Yeah, he was a lot older at 14 looking.
He was a lot older than 14, yes.
Yeah.
Haydn was.
Haydn.
And Beethoven was, well, in his 20s by that time. But Beethoven later complained he learned nothing from the master, who in turn found his talented pupil audacious and somewhat ill-prepared.
Audacious is the word.
Yes. Haydn came to recognize, though, and support Beethoven's genius, and Beethoven to revere Haydn, but Father Joseph committed the unforgivable sin of not sufficiently appreciating him early on. When Beethoven showed Haydn the three piano sonatas, Opus 2, dedicated to him, and here we have a valuable first edition, pilfered from Anthony from Hoboken's collection. And where was I anyway? Oh, yes. The master allegedly advised him to drop the third sonata, which soon became the most popular, and inscribe on the title page of the first, Pupil of Haydn. The dedication never saw the print of day.
Yeah, but he did put it on. That one has it on there, right?
Or no, like, no, not Pupil of Haydn. It just says it's dedicated to Mr. Haydn.
Okay.
Master of the Esterhazy outfit.
Oh, Esterhazy, yeah. Him again.
Yeah, the Esterhazys.
He's everywhere.
Hungarians.
The Hungarians.
Things were going well enough that in 1795 and 96, Beethoven undertook a concert tour of the capitals of Europe, doing much to establish his reputation as a piano virtuoso. It seemed to spur him on compositionally as well. The famous Pathetique Sonata, Opus 13, dedicated to Prince Karl Lichnowsky. And here we have Prince Karl Lichnowsky.
How come you have all their pictures around your house? That's a little weird.
Very difficult to say his name.
Yeah.
Oh, they all come from the an edition of Beethoven's piano sonatas that I have back behind me there.
Oh, can you bring it forward?
With difficulty.
Oh, that was hard. Yeah. That was really hard. Okay. Oh, yeah, it's a big old book.
Beethoven's signature on it.
Yeah.
Very nice.
All right.
Also cost a pretty penny.
I bet. That one probably ran you into 100 or so, huh?
About.
Yeah. That means more, doesn't it?
That means more, yes.
People say about like that. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. That's very interesting.
Yes. But at the same time, the first telltale signs of hearing loss, which defied quack cures and ear trumpets. For a time, Beethoven withdrew nearly entirely from society, unable to either admit his deafness nor deal
with... Wait, excuse me, just a second.
Yes?
Turn off the siren. We know you're coming. In the middle of something here.
I can't even hear it.
Oh, okay.
It's practically noiseless.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Despite all this, in 1801, he entered into the most prolific period of his remarkable career. And here's Beethoven at about age 32.
Oh,
age 32.
So now he's really not smiling. He's digging in.
Yeah, he's for the long haul there.
Yeah.
And he couldn't hear a thing.
Any pictures of him smiling or paintings or any?
Well, only the one with the big eyes.
The big eyes?
You know, at age 14.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
I saw this.
And that was an artist's conception.
No, no, it was supposedly painted from life, you know.
Yeah, but if you're painting somebody, you know, you try to make them look good.
Yeah.
And you had to give him a little smile. Otherwise, he's just an audacious young upstart.
And then, anyway, he, about this time, began reinventing the sonata form.
I did.
I'm not quite sure that's the right words, but anyway, as evidenced by the piano sonata Opus 27, number 2, so-called Moonlight Sonata.
Oh, the Moonlight Sonata.
Which has survived even Liberace's rendering to become perhaps the most popular piano piece of all time. It was written for the Countess Giulietta Guicciardi. a beautiful pupil of Beethoven's, whom, with his amorous pursuit, he drove straight into the arms of a third-rate ballet composer who just happened to be a count, proving that even genius has its limits.
Yeah.
And here's, by the way, some of what his first drafts looked like.
Crossed out a lot, huh?
Yeah, he had second ideas and then crossed out. And sometimes he would cross things out, and then he came back to them and would write the word "gut."
Yeah, it looks just like Bob Dylan's typewriter lyric.
Yeah, well,
the cross out.
Maybe that's where Dylan got the idea. Now, what one of it's all very nice that he dedicated the Moonlight Sonata to Guicciardi, but my favorite dedicatee is of a slightly earlier piano sonata, the Opus 7, is this one. I've liked this name the best, Babette de Keglevics.
Who was she?
She was a countess.
I bet.
And probably married to somebody else.
Countess that counted. Well, yeah. He was quite a dabbler, they say.
Well, he knew where the money was.
I mean, he knew where the women were, too.
And the women, yes.
Yeah.
At this time, Beethoven had begun work on a symphony inspired by Napoleon Bonaparte, who had captured the attention and most of the real estate of Europe, and who seemed to many to be the savior prophesied by the French Revolution. Just as the work was completed on the symphony, Napoleon declared himself emperor, and as with Caesar, all bets were off. Beethoven, who had never invested so much of his romantic idealism in a man before, was furious, gouging Bonaparte's name from the title sheet of his new Third Symphony, later telling a friend in one of the more memorable, if least quotable, remarks on political disillusion, "Even with that shithead, I made a mistake." Nevertheless,
at Ars Fruit,
Eroica Symphony in Memory of a Great Man is unmistakably Napoleon's soundtrack, by turns a soaring and plummeting romantic tour de force infused with Sturm here and Drang there.
Yeah.
Like anything heard before in a symphony, both in virtuosity and its electrically charged emotion. Goethe called it merely astonishing and grandiose. The Sixth Symphony.
I think he would have said it merely astonishing, like that.
Merely astonishing.
Yeah. That has more impact if you say it that way, understated.
Or Goethe, as some people say.
Yeah.
The Sixth Symphony, by contrast, subtitled.
Say it in Chicago.
Well, you know,
we don't say get out on Gertie Street, Goethe. Say what? Where? Goethe. Goethe. Sure.
Goethe. Yes. The Sixth Symphony is subtitled Pastoral, or Recollections of Country Life.
Yeah. How many more are there, symphonies?
A lot more. How many are there?
Yeah. We're on just on the sixth now?
We're just on the sixth now.
Is there I know there's a seventh.
Oh, there are many more, yes.
Is there an eighth?
There's an eighth.
Okay.
Not spoken of very much.
No.
The sixth evokes the moods and rhythms of Beethoven's beloved countryside and the debauchery one might enjoy there. Given this interpretation, the peasant's folk dance becomes a bacchanal with a thundering climax. Possibly continuing this theme, the Seventh Symphony provided a field day for musical interpreters of the day and after. Was it a Bacchic orgy, as Becker called it, the apotheosis of dance as Wagner saw it, or the Ronde de Paysan Berlioz heard? The Seventh is a festival of freedom with presages the Ode to Joy, also known as the Ninth Symphony. Most in the audience during the Seventh's first performance on December 8, 1813, when it was presented along with the composition Wellington's Victory, probably took it as the exaltation of the long-awaited victory over Napoleon. And here we have Beethoven at about that time with his piercing gaze and also unsmiling. One of his last compositions, the String Quartet No. 14, Opus 131, completed in 1826, the year before Beethoven's death, is regarded by Joseph Kerman and Alan Tyson in the New Grove Beethoven as the culmination of his significant effort as a composer ever since going to Vienna. While Maynard Solomon finds in it numerous references to other works and forms, which makes the achievement of unity all the more miraculous. The seven movements run together without pause, and the first and the last bind it together. Although when asked which was the greatest of his quartets, Beethoven characteristically replied, each in its own way, he later conceded the title to the 14th. Beethoven was not recovering from another long illness when he entered immortality on the 26th of March, 1827, with only a Frau von Beethoven, exact identity unknown, maybe his housekeeper, possibly a maid, and his friend Anselm Hüttenbrenner, erstwhile student of Salieri, who some have called merely a passable pianist without giving any evidence, present. Hüttenbrenner recounted years later, in 1860 to be exact, upon my entry into the maestro's antechamber to heaven, the dream weaver himself rose with his last strength, saying only, I am not worthy of your visiting me, possibly to the maid. And so, earthbound no longer, the Lord's maestro, Ludwig van Beethoven, ascends into the pantheon of the musical gods. Other sources claim that Beethoven's last recorded words were, pity, too late, as the dying composer was told of a gift of 12 bottles of wine from his publisher, Schott.
Yeah, that's good too.
In 1863, Beethoven's body, and also that of Schubert, who was buried nearby, was exhumed, studied, and reburied. And then when the...
Wait a minute. He died...
In 1823.
Instead of burying them, and they dug up Schubert?
They dug up both of them and looked at them.
Why? For what?
They were interested in, I guess, how they were doing, how they were coming along, and then they put them back. And then...
In the same place or together? Did they...
No, they put them in their respective places in 63. But then in 1888, the remains of both Beethoven and Schubert were moved to Vienna's Central Cemetery. And the composer Anton Bruckner, another favorite of mine, went to see them. Eyewitness accounts recall that Bruckner fingered and kissed the skulls of both composers. And then there are those who apparently doubt whether Beethoven, like Hitler, ever really died, as evidenced by this page ripped from yesterday's newspaper, hoping the maestro can quell tensions between the U.S. and China. Over lugubrious Moonlight Sonata.
Sorry, weren't you done?
And that's our composer of the week, Ludwig van Beethoven. And if you're wondering how much he wrote...
No, I wasn't. Anybody wondering how much he wrote?
There you have it.
Just one box full. One box of CDs, DVDs.
70 CDs that contains every snippet of...
Seemed a lot more than 7 CDs.
Yes.
Yes. This goes out to Carol, who's out there sleeping already on the...
It was the sunshine.
Backyard, porch. Thank you very much, Lyle Anderson. And maybe something a little speedier right now. Just
maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
Puts one in mind of Moonlight.
All right, quick. For $500, what is this? Lyle Anderson.
Sounds like something Berlioz wrote.
Oh.
That's the sixth.
What?
I think it's from the sixth.
From the what?
It's after the thunderstorm in the sixth.
This is the Peasants' Merrymaking and the third movement. Wake up, Carol! Oh, I thought there was another one. See, you could be sweet, too. Not just bombastic.
No, not Beethoven.
This is very sweet.
Ah, those oboes, those flutes.
This is cartoon music in there for a minute. I like the way he uses horns. Very nice. Innovative. That's where it should have ended. So we'll bid you adieu, Ludwig van Beethoven, and Lyle van Anderson.
And all of his 32 piano sonatas.
Yes, boy, there's so much to think about now that I'm going to try to avoid that because I don't have the time to just think about Beethoven, but it's truly an amazing thing. And we thank you very much, Lyle. Thank you, all of you, for watching or listening. Or sleeping out in my yard there. You people got to go.
Yardbirds.
Through now. You can't just lay around in the yard there because it's going to draw attention to the place. Thank you all very much. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you real soon. From all of us here at the What Do You Know Podcast. Not a lot of us. Me and Lyle, really?
Lighting activate.
Al, talk to me. What's going on here?
That's the FBI. They got the Universal Terrorist Playbook, and they're running it step by step.
It's gonna go. Activate. It's gonna go!